I mean, this is the funny thing, isn't it? You know, the advantage of being an integrated vendor to some extent is you bundle it all up and it becomes, you can make it sort of more economically attractive in some ways because of the economies of scale.
And in theory, work better with each other.
Yeah,
and that would be the ultimate thing. If we get Open RAN vendors going, yeah, we've gone all in on Samsung because all the components work better with each other.
Yeah, yeah,
I know. Completely defeat the whole
thing. This would be the...
Hello and welcome to another telecoms.com podcast. We're shooting this a day early because I've got stuff to do tomorrow. And it's been really nice all week and it's pissed it down today. I think it knows when we're coming in.
It does always rain when we do the podcast.
It does seem to.
But I don't think we'd have avoided it tomorrow either.
No, that's true. It's just meant to just be
shit for
rubbish
a few
for a while. It's been great. I went, there's this pub about an hour's walk from my house. Called the Fox in Willian. Shout out. Rogany, isn't it? Shout out.
Shout out to Willian.
Shout out to the Fox. Like they're going to listen to this. They go, we're on the fucking telecoms.com podcast.
Our revenue is up.
And yeah, it's a really nice walk across countryside. And then you get there and then we had a full on meal and all that sort of thing. And I thought I'd do that in my lunch hour yesterday. Bear in mind, it's an hour's walk each way. You can
so
do
you even took your laptop with you, so you could get a bit of work done.
That I did. I wrote a story.
I saw your photo of you with your laptop.
Yeah, yeah. Wrote a story from the pub.
Is it a more inspired story then?
No, it's fairly short and sweet. It was the one about Nokia in Dallas and having an Open RAN center.
Oh yeah, not that important.
Not that much. Best at best, a four paragraph job.
Yeah.
But I'm sure all other editors would agree with that. And so that was good fun. And I'm pleased I did it. That's one of the reasons I did it. It's because, you know, when you're English and it's a nice day, if you're sat inside the whole time and then it's pissing it down for a month, you just feel like an idiot, don't you?
God, yeah.
So I think I've got a bit of colour. What do you reckon?
You look a bit redder in the face than usual.
A bit more ruddy. anyway, okay, so what are we going to chat about this week? So this week has just been a Vodafone fest.
Mm.
I've had more interaction with Jamie Davis than I did since he stopped working here.
Well, even when he was working here, I don't think I had that much interaction.
Arguably, he's certainly less grumpy now that he's on the PR side of the ledger than he was when he was my minion. Credit where it's due. Jamie's pretty professional. Mm-hmm. And he certainly didn't learn it from me.
No.
But he's, when he's first moving, I was thinking, Jamie, I know, might struggle with some of this stuff, but he's just adapted.
He's a chameleon. He adapts to the world he's in.
Journalists
are supposed to be grumpy bastards, and people are supposed to be more amenable. And
yeah, yeah. Well, fair play to him. No, he's handled it. He's handling these live sort of media Q&As and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think good for him. And as a result, he got a nice lot of coverage out of us. I mean, that's another thing. Another thing Jamie's doing well, this is going to be terrible. By the way, we're having a beer with him after. So I suppose it'd be awkward if I had an opening monologue slagging him off. And then I'm having a beer with him in a couple of hours, knowing that on Monday something's going to come out that could change the dynamic of our relationship. Is that he's just bothering to get in touch, isn't he?
Mm.
He's sort of ringing up and just doing old school PR.
Yeah.
And I suspect one of the reasons he's doing it, well, more than suspect because I've chatted to him, is because until recently he was on the other side of the fence and he knows how effective that is and he knows how rare it is.
Yeah, well, it's useful to have PR people who are former journalists, definitely.
Certainly.
And they know the game. And
But just getting in touch, so few people do it.
Yeah.
This isn't a dig at any particular company or a PR agency. It just doesn't happen very
well. Or they send you an email that gets buried under all the other emails rather than
and it's generic.
You know, using the phone.
I mean, we'll come up to one in a bit where it sounds like Ericsson sort of engaged with you specifically over something. So good for them.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just me. And I actually wouldn't be that surprised if a lot of companies have just decided that the ROI of engaging with me is pretty fucking low. But nonetheless, even compared to 10 years ago, they do it a lot less. But Jamie's a notable exception, so well done. So as a consequence, you've got our leader this week, Jamie. Go on, son. We're going to bang on about Vodafone. They had about at least four stories this week, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about that. Then we're going to move on to the thing I just alluded to. You had a chat with Ericsson about the sort of pace of 5G rollout in Europe, didn't you?
Yeah, comparing it with the pace in other regions of the world.
Right, okay. And so I won't spoiler alert it.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's any great mystery to know that parts of East Asia and parts of North America are ahead of us.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'd warned it was a risk before, and now they're saying it's a reality and they've got provable data.
It's more than a risk, and here we go. Okay, so we're getting to that. And then we're going to finish off, like, talking about sort of global stuff. We had, over the last weekend, we had the G7, where we had this absurd spectacle of these sort of world leaders getting together on a beach and bumping elbows and having a beer. And yeah, and it was all just toe-curling, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. But, you know, they're these sort of, along with things like Davos, you know, you get these sort of self-imposed, we're in charge, just deal with it and shup and do what you're told type of events. And a big thing that came out of this G7, other than Joe Biden just getting lost periodically and having to be led back while he sort of started...
wandering into the waves.
Talking to chairs or something.
That was Clint Eastwood.
Has he done that?
Yeah.
Is he getting a bit doolally?
No, talking about
he's 90.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
It was a thing.
Okay, fine.
He's older than Biden, though, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, well, there we are. Yeah. But we don't look to Clint Eastwood for leadership of the free world.
Maybe anyway, we should.
Maybe we should. Do you know what I mean? Can you imagine him just striding in to chat to Xi Jinping or Vladimir Putin going...
What with his revolver?
That's mighty fine talk. Anyway.
Well, do you punk, I think.
Yeah, make my day.
Yeah, make my day. What was it? There was one quote. Where someone goes, one of his westerns, he confronted a bounty hunter. And the bounty hunter goes, so, well, it's a way to make a living. And he goes, dying ain't no way to make a living. I mean, that's a cool line, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway. It's not Clint Eastwood and all that. But yes, they sort of formalised some structures that are designed to gang up on China.
Mm.
So that is what
that's
we're going
to... That's in fashion at the moment.
Very much so. I know. Do you know what? I might go off on a coronavirus tangent on that one.
Yeah.
So I've been going down the fucking rabbit hole on that shit.
I know. I've noticed all your Facebook posts.
Yeah.
You're mad about it.
Oh, my God.
It's kicking off. Don't roll your eyes. You listen to the same podcast I do. God. Anyway, so Vodafone, I mean, where do we start? Should we just do it chronologically?
Well, we could do. I didn't cover the actual big, more consumer-y reinvent thing.
Well, off the top of your head, was there one Vodafone story that particularly
grabbed
you?
I thought that the interesting one for me was the one that was is chronological, because it was the one right at the start of the week on Monday, which is when they announced their Open RAN vendors, you know, because we're obviously all about the networks, I guess, reading more than anything else, and... That's a big announcement. It's the first European operator, I think, that's actually announced, you know, vendors, Open RAN vendors for quite a big rollout, 2,500 sites. They'd already said they were going to do this. You know, they're under pressure to take Huawei out of the network, basically. And they've got a couple of years to comply with a 35% limit on Huawei in the RAN, which I think they're already kind of compliant with anyway, actually. But then by 2028, they have to get rid of all Huawei in the radio access network.
Yeah.
And... you know, they've decided, unlike the other operators in the UK that are in the same situation, which have gone and sort of done deals with Nokia and Ericsson, Vodafone decided to do something a bit more ambitious, I guess, and see this as an opportunity to try out, you know, this new technology. Open RAN's obviously all over, talk about it a lot, but all about, you know, mixing and matching.
But within Europe, is it fair to say that Vodafone's the biggest sort of cheerleader for Open RAN?
I would say so. I would say them and Telefonica. But Telefonica has done some things in Latin America with it, they haven't, to my knowledge.
And they've got in bed with Rakuten, haven't they?
They've got in bed with Rakuten, and they're sort of involved in the ecosystem, and they're quite supportive. But there's no, you know, and the other operators are talking it up a lot as well. I mean, Orange has made some statements recently about from the mid 2020s, it only wants to buy Open RAN compliant kit. You know, Deutsche Telekom's doing trials, but none of them have gone as far as Vodafone and actually announced a commercial rollout, which is what they've kind of, you know, announced their partners for that this week. And the big winner in it, which it's kind of, I don't know if it's a surprise or not. I mean, people didn't seem surprised by it, but I was surprised some other companies missed out, I guess, because the big winner was Samsung.
Okay. Who missed out?
Well, Samsung's coming in and it's doing a lot. This is the thing.
Yeah. And it's their opportunity, isn't it, to get a foothold?
It is. And although it's Open RAN, one of the interesting things about it is Samsung's actually providing a lot of the bits. And so even though, you know, the idea of Open RAN is you can have a hardware company and use another software company with it, actually they're taking a lot of the stuff from Samsung.
A bit like what we
chatted
about last week with your chip investigation. When you're getting a bigger and bigger chunk of Open RAN bundled up from one vendor, it's not
Open RAN. I mean, I guess, you know, it's supposed to be Open RAN compliant, and there are other companies involved, but they do. I mean, I go through the sort of companies that they've named. Samsung's the big one, so they're coming in and they're providing, as well as some of the radio units. They're also this kind of baseband software provider, and that I think that was the thing that I was a little bit surprised about, because the companies that have been associated with that with Open RAN up to now have tended to be these three US ones: Altiostar, Mavenir, and Parallel Wireless. And Vodafone have been doing trials with Mavenir and Parallel Wireless in the UK.
So they're the ones that you're most surprised didn't make much.
Yeah,
of
I was I was a little bit surprised they didn't get a look in. And now the reason it's not surprising is because Diego Tenorio, who's the head of strategy at Vodafone, and he's also the TIP chairman, telecom infra project chairman, this sort
Facebook-led thing.
He's talked up Samsung a lot in the past. So when TIP did this sort of request for information a couple of years ago, and they were looking at different vendors and how compliant they were with Open RAN, the one that he was most impressed about, and he said this at a conference back in sort of November 2019, I think it was the last conference I went to, was Samsung.
Last conference he went to, November 2019.
So in that respect, it's not a surprise. But I was a little bit surprised Mavenir and Parallel Wireless didn't even get a look in.
Yeah.
And then you've got
actually Mavenir. Mavenir seems to be on, it seems to have quite a lot of positive momentum. It's cropping up quite a lot in these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Samsung is, you know, they're a big company, obviously. As I said, he'd obviously been impressed with what they could do. I guess the fact, I mean, we don't know the commercial deals with these things, you know, what's the terms.
There could be a scale thing.
But there's a scale thing, yeah. I suspect, you know, if they can provide radio units as well. I mean, this is the funny thing, isn't it? You know, the advantage of being an integrated vendor to some extent is you bundle it all up and it becomes, you can make it sort of more economically attractive in some ways because of the economies of scale.
And in theory, work better with each other.
Yeah,
I mean, that'll be the ultimate thing. If we get Open RAN vendors going, yeah, we've gone all in on Samsung because all the components work better with each other.
Yeah, yeah,
they'll completely defeat the whole.
This will be the interesting thing, though, is whether there's, you know, it'd be very interesting if there's any tests that get done where the other hardware that's being used. So the other ones they've brought in as well are NEC, which is providing massive MIMO radio units. So, I mean, this is mainly.
Are they doing that for Rakuten as well?
NEC's doing that for Rakuten, but the difference here is Rakuten's rollout is obviously nationwide in Japan, whereas this is mainly sort of Western UK. It's like rural Wales and as far as I'm aware, in bits of the southwest, you know. So
they've probably got Jamie doing it himself.
He might, yeah.
He's up there, up a mast.
So it's not massive MIMO, you would think. isn't quite as relevant, I don't know. But and then they've also got these Evenstar radio units being used, which I didn't get the full details on those, but they're the things that have come out of TIP itself.
Right, because I don't know much about Evenstar.
Well, it's basically an initiative that involves various companies.
I think Mavenir
has actually had some involvement in Evenstar. And the idea was to create a radio unit that was functional but not super high performance. You know, they weren't looking to do massive MIMO initially. Okay. A good enough radio unit.
Just a solid 4G, starting point.
4G and 5G, I think, that was very, very low cost. So under $1,000 for the unit itself. Don't ask me what a radio unit would normally
cost. Exactly, I've got no basis for comparison. Like, that's good, isn't it?
It's apparently very cheap. So,
it's like the Aldi of radio units.
Exactly. And they reckon they did sort of achieve that a few months ago, and they got some 4T4R, so four transmitters, four receivers, I think. I mean, massive MIMO, you're talking about sort of 64 or even 128.
Powers of two. We like powers of two.
Yeah. So they're using those as well. Now, it'd be really interesting if someone goes, oh, hang on a minute, the Samsung software doesn't work quite as well on our kit. And, you know, and if you see some performance advantages where it's using Samsung kit, but how we'd ever know that, I don't know. I
mean, but if we do know, we'll be just the kind of awkward bastards.
And then the other players they've got involved are Wind River, which is sort of doing the cloud platform, the containers as a service sort of platform on which Samsung's, you know, baseband software sort of runs. And I think the server equipment itself comes from Dell, is it? It's Dell.
Well, I got the story up, but I didn't write it.
Yeah, the server equipment's from Dell. That's sort of the DUs and the CUs. I think it's an integrated sort of distributed and central unit, which basically means, I mean, getting to the point about Intel. Last week we were harping on about that, or I was. So it's all going to be Intel-based, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's all Xeon, the stuff that's inside those servers.
Well, Dell's very in bed with
Intel. So I did ask the question, can Samsung software then work with, you know, if you wanted to introduce ARM-based processors in the future and have, you know, layer one stuff that's based on that instead, could you use Samsung software with it? Because apparently Samsung software is based on FlexRAN, you know, the Intel system, exactly the same as Mavenir, Parallel Wireless and AltioStar. Got a bit of a vague response from them that, yeah, we think the software can evolve as necessary. But clearly at the moment, you know, it's this is still an issue. I think there's not enough being made about this on this topic.
No, at all. And good for you. I don't think companies are very good at fielding awkward questions.
Yeah.
I don't know why they bother having Q&As. I mean, there was another Vodafone thing. We'll get back to your thing. I won't dwell on this tangent until we...
Well, we don't
want
to go on about that one too long, because we've got four of them to do, haven't we?
Yeah, well, okay, well, then let me mention this. There was another thing. There was their more sort of consumer-facing, I can't remember what I call it, Invent or something like that.
Reinvent, yeah.
Reinvent. And I think in the past they've had, like, live events and they've had, like, Lewis Hamilton turning up and shit like that. This time, obviously, it's virtual for the
reasons. They launched 5G at the last one 2 years ago. Didn't have it last year.
That's right. You and Jamie went to that, didn't you?
Yeah.
Maybe that's where they poached him. Maybe was there ever a time ago, when you were busy doing journalism, when you were having furtive conversations?
No, I mean, that's ages ago. I didn't think
they got Lewis Hamilton to lure him in. Anyway, but this one was virtual for reasons that are just only too clear. And their only really substantial thing was the launch of this, what they call it. A new sort of type of tariff that's all mega flexible. There we are. Let me find it.
The word flexible really gets overused in telecom, doesn't it?
Well, I'm not saying they use it. That's my...
Other
they
industries use flexible as much as
they call it Evo. And it's and they're writing in capital, so I don't. That's, by the way, an absolute point of principle for me. I will not write NVIDIA or Exfo or whatever in capitals.
Yeah.
Unless it's a fucking acronym. Unless it actually means something. Yeah, well, that stands for whatever it stands for. I mean, it's an acronym.
Okay.
It's technically an abbreviation. I've realised this acronym actually means an abbreviation that you can pronounce.
Mm. Yeah.
Like radar.
Yeah. I guess so, yeah. But, you know, everyone just says acronym for abbreviation, don't they?
People don't capitalise radar, do they?
Or laser, but they should.
It's because it's become...
Yeah.
See, it goes full circle, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It becomes so well-known, everyone's like, yeah, whatever. Anyway, lots of companies think they're cute capitalising their name, and it just annoys me.
Yeah.
So I won't do it.
Right. Evo, anyway.
Evo is capitalised, but not by me. Okay, have I laboured that point enough?
Good for you.
What does Evo mean? Is it an abbreviation, an acronym?
It stands for everybody... No. I'll just end up saying something rude. And basically what it is they're putting flexibility... It's really flexibility into post-paid contracts. So those are typically ones where you're using the telecoms company as a source of finance for a handset.
Okay.
So let's say you're getting the latest iPhone, costs £1,000, you haven't got £1,000 on you. So you sign up for a 2-year contract at £60 a month. Total cost of ownership is way more than £1,000. You end up paying through your arse, but that's finance for you. I mean, you're always going to pay some kind of interest, aren't you?
Yeah.
And so they've tried to make it more flexible, let you pay more up front, less up front, a longer period, lesser period, let you trade in your old phone and get some money off. I mean, it's not really that innovative.
Mm-hmm.
They're positioning it as it is, but all they really are, you know, just like if you went to get a personal loan or something like that, you'd be able to tweak the terms of the loan, how much you were getting, how long you're going to pay it back over. Obviously, the shorter the period of paying back, the less interest you pay in total.
Yeah.
This is just basic fucking financial services. So that's all they're really doing it, but they're positioning it as...
It's the sort of thing T-Mobile US did a few years ago, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, probably. It's probably like that sort of Un-carrier type of stuff.
Probably noticed what they've done and thought, hey, let's give it a go ourselves. And
yeah, see if we can and that's fine. Noise. I mean, I'm not slagging them off. Good for them for trying to innovate. I'm just saying it's not... You know,
it doesn't quite measure up to launching a 5G service, does it? Which was the one 2 years ago.
Well, there we go. So that was their thing. And maybe it was with that in mind that they spent most of it just banging on about what, in the kindest way I could put it, I put in the headline philanthropy. But in Scott language, after he's had a daddy bottle of Star, I will call...
What's your second daddy bottle of Star?
Well, but I've had one, isn't it? I will call corporate virtue signalling. And they all do it. It's not unique to Vodafone. Even our lovely employer has its moments, which I won't get into because I've got bills to pay. But so their big one was this talk of digital poverty.
What does that mean, Scott?
Well, that's a fucking good question. And I asked that question on the... So they've got this initiative to connect 1 million people living in digital poverty by the end of 2022.
Right.
Okay, and on the surface, that's like, wow, bless them. And I asked what digital poverty is, and apart from, you know, the obvious thing, which is not having any connection to the internet, I just got some sort of vague talk of digital skills and confidence. So...
Can you be as rich as Jeff Bezos, but still living in digital poverty?
Well, I guess so. If you were Jeff Bezos... And you're like, I don't understand the internet. Then yes.
I mean, there are some dinosaurs out there with a lot of money.
Yeah.
Are their lives miserable because they're in digital poverty?
This is where this stuff annoys me. Because you can't measure it. How are we going to know they connected 1 million people who lack digital skills and confidence? Are they going to have 1 million people going, I feel well up for the internet now?
Anyway. It's aimed at helping people who turn up at pubs these days and get turned away because they can't use the NHS app on their phone.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
I've got no problem with it. I'm sure they will help some people materially. And it's great that companies do try and do this stuff. What I won't do is give them too much credit for pure philanthropy. Okay, this is my... This is my concluding paragraph of that bit. Oh, yeah, and there was one other thing that they're talking about, which is sort of eco stuff, which, again, you know, they have to say, what was their quote? This is just from the press release, not attributed to any individual. As part of its commitment to the environment, Vodafone announced it will eliminate all carbon emissions from its UK operations by 2027. Now... Vodafone's commitment to the environment. I'm just not buying it. Eliminate all carbon emissions. That's impossible unless they're using carbon offsets.
Yeah.
And then that's not eliminating them. That's just buying indulgences from some quango. Anyway, my concluding paragraph was claims of moral motive. This is going to undo all the nice things I said about Jamie. No, he's going to listen to this bit. Anyway. Claims of moral motivation from commercial organisations, and nearly all other types for that matter, are not just disingenuous but impossible given their incentive structure. Any attempt to extract brand benefit from such activity only serves to reinforce that perspective. When share price is more sensitive to philanthropic gestures than profit, we will revise that view, but until then we'll continue to follow the money, and there's nothing wrong with that. My point being that it's impossible for... a publicly traded company to be philanthropic. It's not what they're designed to be.
Yeah.
Their shareholders don't reward them for being philanthropic. And people talk about fiduciary duty. You know, it's their job to do this, that, and the other. Yes, it may be that corporate virtue signaling helps their brand and thus has indirect commercial benefits.
Yeah.
But they're not doing it because their primary purpose is philanthropic.
No.
And I just, maybe I'm too absolutist about it, maybe I'm too petulant about it, but it just winds me up when they pretend that all they really care about is saving the world and fluffy bunnies.
Well, I mean, companies only care about making money.
Did you watch that video that I sent you last week?
What was that?
The videos that I sent you last week.
I know, I've forgotten what it is, so why don't you remind me?
No, I'll tell you.
All right. What were you saying?
I was just saying companies only care about making money, really. I mean, that's the point of the companies, to make money.
And that's what I said at the end. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's the gig.
There's nothing wrong with that because, look, you know...
But don't pretend it isn't.
It's the capitalist principle, isn't it? You know, you bring other benefits through... Greed is good, as what's his name said in Wall Street. You know, the idea being that BT goes around and enriches itself and its shareholders, but it benefits everybody else because it gives them communications.
Yes. They've got to charge a premium, and that's their incentive to do it.
But I think the point you make is important, that these days maybe they feel that for brand reasons and just to sort of have people carrying on buying from them, they need to be seen to be good.
Seems to be, doesn't it?
And therefore philanthropy is sort of built into the model in a way.
I just think it's so...
It's not for the right reasons,
it's
arguably.
It's just cynical and superficial. I mean, there was a funny thing that was going around the internet. If you look at companies, their Twitter handles... So everyone's Twitter handle's got this sort of circular thing which will have your photo or whatever or logo. Most companies now put rainbows on their logo,
right,
to signify how their kinship with LGBT, WXYZ plus, all that sort of thing, which is fine. Go ahead. But those same companies don't put that up in countries such as parts of the Middle East,
yeah,
that aren't quite so fluffy and embracing towards, yes, these causes. So that's just a great illustration of the hypocrisy, superficiality and the hypocrisy of it.
Hypocrisy. Yeah, it's just hypocritical, totally.
It is.
Yeah.
But no one thinks otherwise. It only annoys me when people go, oh, isn't that nice?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
No.
It's just ticking a CSR box. Anyway, and I stress, this is hardly unique to Vodafone.
I don't think many people say, isn't that nice, though?
I don't know. I wonder
where
if
are
they
these
think
people?
It.
I would, well, like, I mean, to talk
why
to
do
them.
They keep doing it, then? It must have some benefit.
Well, presumably people do think it's nice, because if everybody thought the same as you, Scott, and it was a deeply cynical move,
yeah,
it wouldn't have the desired impact, would
no.
it? It wouldn't go and buy it. It wouldn't improve your brand.
Yeah.
It'd just make you think, what a bunch of cynical
bastards.
I have bastards.
To assume I'm not a typical consumer.
So I think a lot of people do just take it at face value and like, oh, that's a nice move, isn't it, that BT's made there?
Yeah.
You know, let's donate some money to the NHS for during COVID. People would say that's a nice move, but
yeah, because bless the NHS, we all rely on it for our health,
yeah,
and all that sort of thing. And then NHS
and it obviously is a good thing to do. But
see,
I guess
the NHS nicked the rainbow.
It.
Do you remember? That's quite contentious. When this was all kicking off, the rainbow became more about the NHS.
Oh, yes.
Do you imagine there's a bit of argy bargy between the LGBTs and the NHSs?
Yeah, maybe there's an overlap.
Yeah,
sure, there is an overlap.
Whatever.
Yeah,
but yes. So you like fair play, and they got Mario Tojo involved, and you know he's a great rugby player. I just sort of think,
yeah,
must we pretend?
I'm sure he was at another Vodafone do as well.
Yeah, he's probably before. on the payroll.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other thing. You know, you get Mario Tojo. I don't know anything. I don't even know whether he's paid. But let's assume he was.
What's his name?
Mario Tojo is a second row for England and Saracens.
Mm.
And so they do. So they become brand ambassadors. Like,
yeah,
we had this little bit of fun. You know, we've got the European Championship starting this week, and I haven't watched a single game, by the way. Before
you
accuse
you
me of talking
much.
A good game,
you would like. To your point, it hasn't been that
right.
Great.
It hasn't been thrilling.
Yeah.
One thing that made the news is a couple of press conferences. One with Cristiano Ronaldo. One with Paul Pogba.
Yeah.
The first one with Cristiano Ronaldo. He'd be, you know, they're always just surrounded by branding, yeah?
Yeah.
There's all the stuff behind them. And they started plonking bottles in front of them.
Yeah.
And Cristiano Ronaldo's obviously just got sick money.
He's a health freak as well.
And he's a health, well, they all are to some degree, but he's especially. He makes you look like me.
Yeah.
And they stuck a couple of bottles of full fat Coke in front of him. And he was just like, no, I'm not having this. He swept them aside and then put some water there and then went agua. Which turns out it's the same in Portuguese as in Spanish.
Yeah.
And that was it. You know, he didn't go on about it. He didn't start dissing Coke or anything like that. I actually had to look up who's a brand ambassador for, and Coke isn't, or water or whatever isn't one of his.
It'd be hypocritical if he was an ambassador for Pepsi. Can you imagine?
Well, but Pogba is. So I wish Pogba had done that.
Pogba removed the
Heineken
bottle. Because
yeah,
he's Muslim. Ironically,
we don't know that. He hasn't said a statement.
It has to be because he's Muslim.
But yes, maybe, but it's still an assumption. We don't know what his motivation was. It was also alcohol-free.
But he left the Coke, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think your assumption is probably accurate. I'm just saying we don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this is all part of this world. Like, we've got Marcus Rashford, you know, he's doing all this good stuff about school dinners, but his brand value's gone through the fucking roof,
yeah,
as a consequence. And he's managed by an agency that focuses on basically monetizing philanthropy.
Yeah.
So all this stuff's cynical.
Which in itself is.
Yeah, and all this stuff's cynical, and it's all
but
fine.
In fact, if that can generate more philanthropy, then that's good.
Well, that is the good counter-argument. If it's a win-win, then what am I moaning about? And that's a good point. The only thing I'm moaning about is just the dishonesty, I suppose.
Well,
but then it wouldn't
case,
work. If he just said, I'm just doing it because I'm getting paid £1 million to say it, then it would obviously...
In his case, the kids' meal, that was full on his initiative, I feel.
Well... maybe, but it just so happened that he was run by an agency that specialises in exactly that sort of thing. So maybe he always cared about it. I know he grew up in impoverished circumstances, and it was obviously a bugbear.
Maybe that's why he picked him.
But maybe his managing agents went, yeah, Marcus, go with that. Do you know what I'm saying? This is how it is. Money rules, especially in the West. And I'm the last to go, oh, isn't money terrible? It's just the dishonesty. Which is where everyone will go, well, of course I'm doing it for the money. What the fuck else do you think I'm doing it for?
You're like an old man barking at the clouds.
Yeah, there we are. I'll rant over. Let's move on to the last bit of Vodafone news of the week. Well, it's two bits.
Well, there's two more.
I condensed them into one story that I wrote this morning in a hurry. So my headline was AWS takes Vodafone to the edge. And I linked to both your stories in this one because you just did a better job than I did on both. But then you're not an editor and you got some colleagues.
Yeah.
So before you start judging me.
I wasn't saying anything.
I know you were. I was just being silly. So actually, well, having said you did a better job, let's hand it over to you. Why don't you start with the Edge one? What were they saying about that?
Yeah, the Edge one was already known, really, because they talked in December about this deal with AWS. Another cloud deal, you know, we always go on about this.
And we'll say, sorry to butt in, what passes for my research, there was actually a wavelength announcement in late 2019 involving Vodafone.
Yeah, so it's, I think, been wavelength brewing for that long. First partners is Verizon, Vodafone, I think SK Telecom and
something
KDDI,
like that, yeah.
Which is pretty impressive footprint, you know, and gets to the point we always make about cloud companies
moving deeper
into the... Yeah. I mean, I stayed away from that angle for my particular story.
No,
I noticed this week. But,
I was thinking perhaps Ian feels he's laboured at that point.
I'll go back to it, I'm sure, next week. But yeah, I mean, it was known they were doing it. And I mean, the interesting thing was the details, really, I suppose, and what companies were going to sort of start providing services this way. So I kind of focused on that because they had this press event, which I think got mixed feedback from people that I spoke to. It was quite short and there wasn't that much from Vodafone and AWS, but
I've got some great goss for you on that later.
Okay, but I quite liked the guy. They had a guy from a company called Sportable, who was the co-founder. He's called Peter Hoosmeyer, but it's quite an interesting company because it sort of does technology and analytics, you know, like kicking rugby balls around.
So it's specifically embedded connected technology in a
embedded
sporting setting.
Technology, and you know, so you can sort of see if the ball's, you know, out in tennis and things like that because it's got sensors in it.
And there's tracking, and you see
how fast it is and all that. And all that sort of people who are sports fans, especially American ones, get obsessed with stats, don't they?
Yeah.
They love numbers. And apparently he said he was watching a game of ice hockey.
That was his apocryphal
thing,
wasn't it?
Each other, and you can measure
that with
wearables.
You want to know there was a body check.
Yeah.
And so they've got these embedded vests, these connected vests.
And this is a really good use for edge computing, apparently, which is, you know, so the deal is an edge computing deal. Wavelength is basically a bit of Amazon Web Services technology that allows you to kind of do all the processing locally, essentially, rather than having to go back to these big central data facilities. You're sort of moving everything into a local zone, so you cut out the journey time for the data signal.
And the significance of that is that everything has speed limit, even light.
Exactly, yeah.
And if you want low latency.
You don't want to get hundreds of miles back to some data center in Ireland or something.
First time I had this explained to me was at an Omdia event in King's Cross, and it was Marcus Weldon.
Oh, yeah, he was good at talking about that.
And he was just talking about the basic physics of it.
Yeah.
You know, the further away you are, there's going to be some lag. It's still not going to be much.
Basically, the signal's making fewer hops. It's a shorter journey.
Fewer hops and shorter
companies like Fastly.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
And point of something it's called.
Point of presence?
Yeah.
Point of presence. So wavelength is allows you to do that at these sort of local zones. I mean, the interesting thing is you don't, what Vodafone's saying, you don't actually need very many of them to do a nationwide service. I mean, I asked that question on the call and they said three or four of these. They reckon three or four of these new facilities, basically, they can do a nationwide service where they're getting roughly 10 millisecond latency between the
base
station
and the core. So there we're having to stretch the definition of edge, aren't we?
Well, I suspect some of these things like wavelength, maybe there's going to be a lot more zones in a market like the US, for instance, which is thousands of miles big. And, you know, if you're relying on a couple of big data centers there and you've got huge, if your latency's up at, I mean, Vodafone was saying, I think average latency on its networks is often a sort of 50 to 200, that's a big range, but it can be anywhere between 50 and 200 milliseconds.
Right.
And what they reckon with wavelength.
So the 200 milliseconds is a fifth of a second.
Yeah, they reckon they can get it with wavelength, they can get it down to about 10. It's actually a bit higher than that because the 10 that they're talking about actually refers to the latency between the base station and the core, whereas the link from the user to the base station adds in latency. So the actual tipping point, they reckon, where you start to notice problems with gaming and some of these services that this guy from Sportable was talking about, is kind of 40.
Okay.
And he reckons, I mean, it's actually in the press release, but he was saying that his own latency through using wavelength has gone down sixfold to about 38. So it's below that 40 level from up at, whatever, 200 and odd before. So it's a big improvement.
Yeah. And the press conference was a bit of a wavelength loving, wasn't it?
It was a wavelength loving, but I thought it was good to get him on because he was very articulate.
Yes, I thought he was good.
And I thought the other benefits that he was talking about were interesting for some companies as well. So, for instance, he's used to sending out teams to stadiums and stuff, and they have to deal with a lot of cable. They have to transport the servers around and stuff like that, and it's costly, and you've got setup time and everything. Whereas basically what they're now doing is entrusting everything to AWS, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And they won't let you down,
just ask Parler.
Yeah, exactly. So from a service, yeah, we can talk about the reliance thing on the one hand, but on the service side... That's obviously great because he can cut down on staff needs, he can cut down on costs.
All the upsides. So that's the upsides, real upside.
I mean, my concerns about reliance on public cloud are one thing. I mean, the other thing I put in my story, I think, was, is this a really big deal for the telcos? You know, is it? I mean, a lot of the use cases and the companies that were named in Vodafone's press release it's pretty niche stuff, yeah. I mean, I think there was one that's a Cambridge bus service for university students.
Yeah, with that weird shaped bus.
Yeah, and there's a keyless security company talking about speeding up authentication. But I didn't come across. I mean, the one that seemed to have perhaps broader interest was something that InterDigital's doing. But that only seems to be from a research perspective at the moment, because they are a research company, which was using edge services in a factory environment to kind of speed up processes. And you can see that being perhaps a bigger deal. But I just wonder if this is a really big sales opportunity for Vodafone Business. Makes about 12 billion in euros a year. And you just kind of wonder whether this is really going to move the needle, this move into edge computing.
I was just going to say,
I looked at Verizon's results, because Verizon's been talking about wavelength since late 2019. And I think they've had services up and running for quite a while. So I looked at their figures. Their business revenues went down last year about 2%. And Amazon, AWS's were up 10 billion to 45 billion.
Yeah, they just don't get started on that.
So it's kind of who's doing well out of this kind of stuff. At the moment, it's not obvious that any operators are making and it's early days. Okay, I know it's early days, but it's not obvious this is a massive deal for operators.
Well, so I've got something to add on that. I chatted to a chap called Andrea Donner.
Oh, yeah.
Who is Vodafone. His precise title is UK Network and Development Director. He's basically UK CTO.
He's Chief Network Officer, yeah.
And we chatted about this, that and the other. I quoted him talking about the eco stuff in that one where I was sort of sceptical about the philanthropy.
Yep.
And he redirected it in a way that's much more Scott-friendly. I'm basically going, okay, but there are distinct business benefits, i.e. just, you know, cost of energy consumption, all that sort of thing. And I was like, okay, fair play to you. And I concluded my story by going, that's more like it. Yep. Let's stop talking about saving the world and start talking about why it's in your interest to do it. Anyway, and we started talking about that. Vodafone's got this narrative where they're going from a telco to a tech co.
Yeah.
And you've probably heard similar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's like a, you know, what is it? A communication service provider to digital service provider. You know, this digital transformation stuff.
Yeah.
And he was going, some of this stuff, like this edge business, is speculative. He was quite honest. And just going, it's speculative. We're just rolling the dice.
Yeah.
But you got to be in it to win it.
For sure.
So I think you're right to go, it's not obvious where the ROI is. But what they're saying, which I think is sensible, is they're saying, well, look, we're just getting involved.
Yeah.
They had that thing, didn't they, a few weeks ago in their quarterlies where they announced a big sort of CapEx thing and their shareholders shat themselves and their share price went down about 5-10%, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, I was surprised it went down as much as it did because the CapEx increase wasn't actually that
much. No, it was a bit of an overreaction, wasn't it? Anyway, but... I
mean, maybe I'm missing something, but...
Yeah, quite possibly. But the point is, if Vodafone is continuing to say, well, fuck it, we're gonna invest, we're going to roll the dice, we're going to do some stuff that might not pay off.
Yeah.
But we're never going to hit the jackpot. This is like moonshot stuff, isn't it? We're never going to hit the jackpot unless we're getting involved.
Yeah.
Then I think, yeah, fair play to them. And I think that's what this Edge stuff is it's not obvious how they can even charge for it directly.
Yeah, well, that's all unclear. And I guess if you ask questions, I think one of our former colleague, Ray Lemaitre, is now at Telecom TV. I saw he submitted a question about sort of arrangements on revenue sharing and stuff like that. And they didn't answer it on the call. It's one of those things they probably dealt with afterwards. Yeah. I didn't read Ray's coverage, but I'd be very surprised if he got a clear answer about that.
No.
Because they don't... I mean,
it's either
revenue share, but this is why I think Amazon's doing better out of this, because it's either a revenue share or, you know, and you sense that Vodafone is probably paying Amazon something for this, yeah? I mean, they're basically taking an Amazon product, Wavelength, and rolling it out at some of their facilities. So there's got to be some kind of, you know, and Amazon's done deals with some pretty big players now, Verizon, KDDI, SKT. This Wavelength stuff, to me, is just, you know, it's another instance where it just seems like a much better thing for the public cloud guys than it is for... Mm. Because if it doesn't work, what have they really lost? You know, public cloud is growing at... They were on 35 billion.
Well, it'll work on a technical level.
It's interest from the market.
Exactly. You know, this Spotify, is that what it's called?
Sportable.
Confusing it.
Can you imagine?
Yes, combining. This Sportable thing sounds fun, but again, you know, I'm trying to work out, you know, they even talk about augmented reality, and I'm trying to work out whether or not I pay to be able to see all these measurements through my phone when I was watching it. That remains to be seen. Well, and I think they sell the data to teams, and then they sell it to teams,
and I think it's probably important for match officials. I mean, we've seen match officials are relying more on technology to make decisions. They need to get that instantly. You know, if there's some kind of lag, then how disruptive it would be, I don't know that it's a, you know, 200 millisecond lag rather than a 38 one. But he did say it was important for, I think, reasons of fan engagement, just getting stuff to them.
And then if you're early to market, you know, in 10 years' time, it could be default. It could be that every sport is riddled with this AR layer of data over the top of it. And then the Sportable guys are just laughing.
But I guess it's important for Sportable, maybe just for their own commercial deals, you know, when they're trying to get these agreements to be the provider.
Makes sense for them.
If they're saying, look, we've got this underlying infrastructure that's provided by AWS, and it means we can do this and we can do that, and it's super quick. It's, you know, the broadcasters and whatever who are involved in, I don't know how that business model works. I don't want to start saying who makes decisions about who uses Sportable, but it would sound like it's a good thing for them.
I think they name drop
winning deals.
Partners.
So,
okay.
And if that's the case, then maybe it turns out to be a bigger affair in some sectors than I'm saying.
Yeah, so I think we're agreeing that it's not obvious that it's going to pay off now, but fair play to them for giving it a go. I'm going to skim past the last Vodafone thing, because we've been chatting for ages.
Right.
Basically, I'm going to summarise it very quickly. They announced Ericsson as a 5G standalone core vendor. And good for Ericsson and all that. I think they announced a similar thing in Germany. This is just for the UK.
Yeah.
I think they announced a similar thing in Germany in April.
Yeah.
But one thing that's worth stressing is this isn't a straight-up replacement core. This is like they're developing the 5G standalone core in and of itself, hence the name standalone, I guess.
Yeah. But I think they will replace it.
Eventually, and it's Cisco is the incumbent, isn't it?
So Cisco would go out.
Yeah. So then the question is over how much time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well,
They're not under pressure like BT, which is also using an Ericsson core, but has to get Huawei out and has to do that within a certain amount of time.
So they can afford to do it as
But you still feel, I mean, heavy reading did a survey on this, and I think it was 86% of operators want to have a single convert. You just want it for reasons of efficiency, I guess, really. You don't want to have two of them. So, I mean, Cisco's not doing particularly well, is one of my takeaways from this on winning 5G.
I've got to say, this is ignorance. I don't cover Cisco very much. Because
Cisco's been a player in that core market.
Yeah,
in the
past, didn't even realise. It stands to reason, switches and all that.
And they're not.
Their
I spoke
core thing.
To a couple of analysts, and they're core not showing thing. Up on this sort of 5G stuff very much at all. And they're also getting. I mean, in Rakuten's case, Rakuten uses a Cisco core. But they're moving to NEC with 5G.
Yes.
And they're going to be scrapping the Cisco core when they do that.
And this is something I remember, I think even when I went to a light reading, you know, the 2020 sort of exec fest.
Yeah.
And that was when, I think the last one, when Steve Saunders was still around, and he was doing a lot of whispering. I think he tried to throw a grenade into Cisco saying that they were fucked in telecoms or something like that. That'd be the sort of thing Steve would say.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah. And, you know, and Ray in his slightly more measured way was going, yeah, he's got a point.
Yeah.
And I think they'd had some shenanigans at the top, head of something or other had been dropped from their telecoms division. And there was just a general, it was an easy narrative to be formed about how they were taking their eye off the ball from the telecoms vertical.
Yeah, versus. I mean, they're more enterprise anyway, aren't they, really? And maybe that's their priority, but, you know, it's...
But if they were once doing really well, then, you know, but surely they still want the business.
Here's the other interesting thing to me about this core stuff, though, because, you know, we talk about RAN and diversifying the market, yeah? And Vodafone's obviously doing really interesting things there with Open RAN, which we've already talked about, and getting new vendors in. You know, UK's not going to be quite as dependent post-Huawei on Ericsson and Nokia as we thought in the RAN. The brains of the network, meanwhile, the really important stuff, guess who provides all the core networks for UK operators now? It's pretty much all either Ericsson or Nokia.
Yes.
Even more so after this deal. So moving from Cisco, you've come up with a less diversified market.
Yes.
But they've not moved from Cisco, I should say. They've still got it there. But if that's the idea, BT uses Ericsson. Vodafone's going to be using Ericsson. Three uses Nokia, and O2 uses a mixture of Ericsson and Nokia. So if something goes wrong with Ericsson's software, as happened a couple of years ago, I remember, and there was a big outage, wasn't there, that affected a few customers because of some particular bit of software, then a few networks in the UK look vulnerable.
Well, that's a good angle. Okay, I'm going to move it on just because we've done this forever.
Yeah.
And we've got like maximum about 20 minutes left, haven't we, Pierre? But that's fine.
25,
okay. So, well, I'm going to throw it back to you anyway.
Yeah.
Tell us.
He's off anyway.
He's off. He's had enough. He's getting hot.
It does get hot.
Mm. People have started coming back into the Informa Towers. So basically the last few months we've been filming this, it's just been us coming in. And even that was up. Even that was in danger when Pierre committed lift crime 1 week.
Oh,
but we got away with it.
I went in the wrong lift. Yeah.
Well, I think I did that today, but they'll never figure out it's me because there's too many people in the building.
The perfect crime. Yeah. Anyway, but now we've got other people here. So partly we're worried about them listening to my filthy language. Mm. And partly we don't want people walking past nattering and screwing up the audio.
Unless
but it got so hot that Pierre's just opened them up the window.
Pass and offer us beers, perhaps. They could do that.
Do you know what I mean? Is that so much to ask? Anyway, so you chatted to Ericsson, and this wasn't a thing that I was aware of, so I think this was a specific dialogue between you and them.
Yeah, it was an exclusive that we got.
An exclusive?
Yeah. I mean,
did you write exclusive? I don't think you did.
I didn't write exclusive. I don't like doing things like that.
No, it's a bit self-aggrandizing, isn't it?
Yeah, and also it just gets in the way of the headline.
It does.
But
anyway,
I mean,
tell us about it.
It was interesting. I mean, it's not. They've been on and on for a while about Europe sort of falling behind the rest of the world in 5G rollout. Which is obviously a bit of a self-serving message because it suits
vendors. So
it which I put in my story. You have to acknowledge that. They obviously want people to buy more of their stuff. But, you know, last year they were talking about it being a risk. And the conversation I had with a guy called Christian Leon, who's actually head of networks for Europe. So I guess he's just under someone like Arun Bansal, who's head of Europe generally
full
for everything.
Stop. Yeah.
Was that what's basically happened... And I got a lot of data from them, which is partly sourced from Ookla. They had to get permission to use it, but it's also partly Ericsson data, is that you've had these auctions of mid-band spectrum in Europe, in most countries now, actually, most of the big markets. But what they've actually used to roll out 5G so far has tended to be, they've tended to do it using this technology called dynamic spectrum sharing,
yep.
Which means using your 4G spectrum, which is lower band, and basically being able to share it between 4G and 5G.
And the dynamic bit is just cleverly switching as and when.
So even though they've been won their licenses, and there might be some cases where spectrum hasn't been freed up. I mean, the regulators are a bit culpable, I think, Ericsson was saying. But they were saying that's not the main issue. It's not the auctions anymore. It's the strategy around mid-band. There's basically just not enough mid-band technology available in Europe. And
why not?
Because they haven't rolled it out. They've rolled out using DSS.
So I guess I might be preempting what you're about to say, but why have they made that decision? I mean, they could have done it.
They could have done it.
Yeah.
But it costs a lot of money, doesn't it, to roll out a mid-band network? And yeah. I suppose, I mean...
So it's sort of CapEx hesitation.
I think it's CapEx. Now, look, there's all sorts of issues with the European market that I didn't really go into detail with the conversation I had with Christian Leon, but you can see these are flagged in its own annual report and they're things we know about. It's a very competitive market. You know, we see operators flogging stuff all the time and trying to cut, you know, reduce costs. they're heavily regulated. You know, it's a much, I mean, it's arguably a tougher environment for them to be, you know, investing heavily in than, say, the US or China. But the upshot basically is
we see what happened to Vodafone when they start talking about CapEx.
Yeah.
All the investors shit themselves.
And one of the other problems is the grid isn't as dense in a lot of European countries as it is in parts of Asia.
So by if you grid, you mean electricity?
No, the telecom grid, the mobile.
Oh, the actual just grid.
Yeah.
So if you look at
South Korea, for instance, they have about, I calculated this, but they've got more than 50 base stations per, the way of measuring it, I think, is per 100,000 people is a convenient way to measure
I
it.
I see.
So they've got more than 50 base stations per 100,000 people. Germany's got 8. France has got 7. So they basically, what you know, we talk about densification and putting in new sites. Mm-hmm. They already had a really dense grid with 4G in South Korea, which means if you're running 3.5 gigahertz, doesn't travel as well, the signals don't travel as far. You've got a very dense grid and you put in 3.5 gigahertz technology,
that
then that's great for coverage and you don't have any gaps. If you've got a grid like the one in Germany and you put in 3.5 gigahertz and you haven't made any sort of DSS investments either, let's say, you'd end up with loads of spotty gaps, perhaps, or you'd end up with cell edge problems. So what they've tended to do, I think, in these markets is to focus initially on DSS. But the problem then is, if you compare like some of these European markets, the big ones, to South Korea and China's another one as well that's taken a huge lead, and you look at coverage just on the mid-band, Ericsson's calculates less than 10% in Europe. Less than 10% of people across Europe and the UK have access to 5G mid-band.
Right.
Whereas in China and South Korea is over 90% now.
Mm.
And China's up at like 40 or 50%.
Wow.
And
China, which is a huge country, that says something, doesn't it?
And what it also means is that the speed of service that you're getting on those networks is a lot slower. So you roll it out with DSS, where you're using this sharing, you're getting 4G-like speeds.
And even Vodafone's
CEOs complained about this. Nick Reed was on a call like saying how DSS isn't very good, it's not real 5G. And yet Vodafone's relied on it in quite a few markets. I mean, maybe they've done it and he thought, oh my God, this
is
what we're getting.
Nick? Yeah.
So what that means is that if you compare like download speeds in China and South Korea and other leading countries with Germany and the UK, France, I mean, they get it. I think in South Korea, you're up at sort of maybe 300 or 400 megabits per second average download speed.
Wow.
None of the European countries are above 150.
Yeah.
And what Ericsson was saying is that if these applications do start to emerge, you know, what happened with 4G is the countries that sort of seeded 4G first and did very well in it tended to be the markets where innovation happened. Like Uber, for instance, might be a good example of that.
So there was a driver.
Yeah. So,
excuse the pun.
Yeah. And they're saying that, you know, these, if you look at the moment, the countries that could take, if these applications come along, for instance, that use things like VR, you know, or AR, or some of the stuff that Vodafone might be talking about actually with the edge, you know, that where you do need more capable networks, not just lower latency ones, Europe's just not in a position to support them.
Right. Yes, just end off.
So when people talk about this 5G race, you know, and you hear a lot of people saying, well, why is it important? Why is there a need for it? Why is 5G a race anyway? What does it matter? It matters if applications are appearing that we can't take advantage of in Europe, or we just don't have the companies that are investing in them. We don't have the application developers.
And we're not creating the next Uber
We're not creating the next Uber. We're not the innovators.
Haven't been for a generation plus.
But we're not even, you know, people aren't able to use these high capacity services. I mean, there's always going to be some kind of, people do these studies, don't they, where they link GDP to mobile broadband rollout and broadband rollout, and it does have an impact, yeah?
Totally.
And this is why 5G rollout is important.
Look at what's happened in the last year or two with working from home.
Yeah.
Imagine you're a really shitty connectivity.
Yeah.
Or you're living in digital poverty, Vodafone.
I reached out to a few.
It would be harder, wouldn't it, to have coped with this isolation that we've all had to deal with?
Completely, yeah. So I got in touch with a few operators because I thought it's only fair to sort of give them a chance to comment. And Orange, BT, and Telefonica didn't want to comment, and Deutsche Telekom did supply a comment, but they didn't deny what was being said. But I mean, I read it; their statement's a little bit odd. It's sort of, you know, almost like it's been written by somebody who's, you know, first language isn't English. It's feasible as they're a German operator, but But it says, our ambition is to create the best network experience for our customers wherever they are. That means to boost capacity with 5G in addition to 4G in rural areas, for example, with DSS, and to bring high speed in areas where it's really needed. Blah, blah, blah. 5G is more than an app benchmark measurement showcase, and speaking only about speed is far away from customer centricity. For us, it's the evolutionary next step to save the best customer experience in Germany. So they're basically sort of acknowledging that the speeds aren't up to what you can get in
and then
markets.
Trying to deflect away from just pure speed onto general other customer things. Experience. But which is fine.
But that's not how they've ever marketed themselves in the past, is it, operators? It's always been about megabits per second and how much you can get through the pipe and all this kind of stuff.
And now suddenly it's like, well, hold on, let's chill with the speeds and feeds now that they're not measuring it. I know. Well, that's just standard corporate. I mean, God, you know, we've been journalists for however long we've been journalists. We've been fed this kind of obfuscating FUD so many times.
But I think another factor may be, you know, if we're trying to be fair and look at it from the operator's point of view, you know, I mentioned all the sort of market structure factors that you get in Europe, which make it much busier and they're not, you know, their margins perhaps aren't as good. But they've also had the Huawei swap out going on. You know, they've had geopolitics. I mean, this was blamed in the UK, wasn't it?
Which for holding
it. I know some people sort of dispute how disruptive it's going to be and how much cost it is going to add. But the fact is that they've had to deal with an issue that they haven't faced at all in Asia or the US, because they never had Huawei in the main networks in the US anyway.
Of course, yeah.
And the, you know, the Chinese and the South Koreans haven't gone around sort of banning particular vendors. So yeah. I think that's something else you have to consider in all of this as well.
So I'll get you to summarise and then I'll move it on. What do you think?
I didn't have a takeaway, really. It's a very newsy story.
Fair enough. All right, well, that's what I was leading up to.
I wrote it up as a very kind of newsy piece because you make of it what you will, but I think
Do you think Europe's got a good excuse for trailing East Asia and North America?
I think there are good reasons why they're trailing, but I think Europe needs to worry about being behind. I think it's no longer, I mean, this is the interesting thing. Ericsson was saying about a year ago, there's a risk that unless something changes, they're going to be behind. They got on the phone and they said, it's not a risk anymore. We're really behind now. And, you know, that's a worrying thing for policymakers in particular, I would say, because if they're counting on 5G to do so much for their economies, then it's just not there at the moment in the mid-band.
Yeah, and you get the EU, and you know, obviously anyone who's listened to this podcast a few times know I'm biased against the EU, but you'll get them banging on about all these things that are good for the whole of Europe. Well, fucking...
I know, and it's arguably a worry for application developers as well, you know, and companies that want to take advantage of 5G capability, because it's just not there. I don't think it's as much of a worry for the operators themselves, because if you don't have a network that's mid-band capable in your own market, why do you care? You know, if nobody else is investing in mid-band, you know, the operator in the UK doesn't care about falling behind the operator in South Korea, does it?
No.
It's more of an issue for a national economy.
Totally. And then a more
And it's, block a, it's economy. Obviously an issue for Ericsson because it wants to sell equipment.
Yes. And we understand, but, you know, and we'll laugh, you know, back when Boye at Cohn was going, poor old Huawei, we all knew exactly where he was coming from. Yeah. And I fear his worst fears might be realised on that. Well, actually, that's a good segue into sort of China, China-ness. So we had this G7 thing where these... basically, it's geopolitical, but it's geographical in so much as it's like NATO plus Japan. I don't even know if Japan's part of NATO. I doubt it, because it's not North Atlantic, is it? Pretty fucking far from the North Atlantic.
Yeah, it won't be, yeah. It's just a European thing.
And so what it seems to be is rich US allied democracies. So if you're going to expand the G7, you probably get South Korea in there, you probably got Australia in there, maybe other European countries. But you know, it's the West in inverted commas, and obviously Japan's in the East, but it's the West as far as geopolitics is concerned. And I suppose free and open, or relatively free and open democracies. Don't get me started on how free and open we are, because that's a different rant altogether. But free and open democracies is what joins them all together, as opposed to the likes of Russia, China, autocratic, despotic, undemocratic places. Now, you know, we can characterise them in certain ways and say, oh, they're Vladimir Putin's horrid and Xi Jinping's horrid, but we do plenty of bad shit as well. So I'm not going to get into the morality of the stuff. Anyway, that's the bloc that exists. And they just get together, and it's the UK's turn to host it. And because they were going to bang on about eco stuff, they went and did it down in Cornwall at some place called the Eden Project, so they could have pictures of domes and, I don't know, dodos or something in the background.
Yeah.
And the weather was nice, so they were on the beach, and they had to do all this sort of coronavirus stuff of, like, touching elbows instead of shaking hands. Well, do you know one funny thing about that? So you don't shake hands because, do you remember when coronavirus started, everyone was all obsessed about hand washing, and we had all this alcohol rub and stuff that you still get now. They try and get you to put it on your hand when you go into the pub.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they're going to get coronavirus off your fucking pint glass.
Yeah.
Or you put your mouth
or in bookshops in particular, I've noticed. Bookshops around browsing.
Right, they don't want you leaving coronavirus on the book.
You put your mouth on the paint, though. So.
You put your mouth... Because yeah, exactly.
People might come along and lick the books. And, you know, well, I suppose you're going to touch
it. It's just silly. Without considering that viruses can't exist at all outside of the human body or outside of a beach of moisture. But anyway. And so they're doing this elbow thing. But one of the funny things about it is when you... If you're going to shake elbows, you're getting your faces really close to each other.
Yeah.
So I bet epidemiologically, elbow banging,
it's more like
for want of a better word.
Or were they wearing masks when they were doing
actually,
it?
Well, no, they weren't. But well, they were and they weren't. It's completely ad hoc. And then they had this little piss up because they had all these photos of them just hanging out. They're just normal people like you and me.
Well, it's like people on talk shows where they have those clear plastics between each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And then as soon as they cut and they go backstage, they're all together.
It's all for optics, as Americans would say. But yeah, that particular thing makes me laugh because you're actually snogging someone to go and do that. But that's not what I want to talk about. G7, there were two stories from that. They were both to do with basically the G7 ganging up on China in a telecoms context. So the first one I wrote, my headline was US and G7 try to outbribe China over global 5G rollout. So this was actually a sort of US initiative that followed the G7. They had this communique where they came out with all these things, most of which were the sort of standard sort of generic stuff. But there was one where they talked about, I don't know if I've got it here. They were talking about strengthening our partnerships. So using that kind of euphemistic language that we're all used to. And what they really meant was the G7 needs to get better. In the nicest possible interpretation, they need to play nicer with the rest of the world. So that means Latin America, Africa, Middle East, other parts of Asia, that sort of thing. But what it meant in practice was China, through its Belt and Road Initiative, has been doing a great job of, especially with Africa, really ingratiating themselves or even just directly buying bits of countries.
Yeah.
And they're belatedly going, hold on a sec, we better get involved in this.
Yeah.
And so there's this switch in the rhetoric, like under the Trump presidency, they'd go around and sort of threaten people and say, we'll kick you out of intelligence sharing arrangements and we'll put up trade tariffs. It's all, and Trump's a bit like that. He's very transactional. He's like, he just likes to set up a hard negotiating position in order to meet in the middle. The Biden presidency, how much of which Biden himself is directly responsible for, is highly debatable. But the Biden presidency is more about the more old school, traditional, touchy feely. Let's get some win wins. Let's all help each other out. But it's the same stuff. It's just different rhetoric. Trump's rhetoric is very crude. This rhetoric's a bit more polished. And they're basically going, we need to. That's how I characterize it. We need to outbribe China. China's going around, like one conspicuous win, which I think we might have mentioned in the pod recently, was in Ethiopia, where they've just opened up their telecoms market. And it was a straight battle between a US-backed consortium and a Chinese-backed consortium, and the US won, basically, because they chucked more money at it.
Yep.
So the long and short of it is, if you're an operator in South America, Africa, wherever else, Philippines... You've now basically got the US and its allies and China chucking money at you. And so what the US wants, it basically wants to bribe them to shun Huawei and ZTE kit.
So the US and G7 countries are basically funding the rollout of 5G in developing markets.
Yeah.
To prevent the rollout of 5G from being led
from
by
having
Huawei
and ZTE kit in it. And there's some wonderful language in it. So they talked about a build back better world. So build back better is this cliche that Davos people and G7
are. It's almost like hand space.
Right.
It's almost like that. I hate those three.
The alliterative stuff.
Yeah.
and it's very sinister because they're basically going out of the wreckage of the coronavirus pandemic. Let's create a more statist environment.
Yeah.
That's basically, you know, we know best. We're going to build it back better. You just shut the fuck up, proles. We've got this. And you know, I'm very hostile to that, as I'm sure is obvious. And so I said, long and short of it, the US is belatedly realizing that combating bribes with threats doesn't work and is now working to, quote, incentivize developing economies around the world to shun Huawei and ZTE kit. The wonderfully sinister language doesn't end there. Apparently, the US is offering to train, in inverted commas, foreign politicians and regulators to see the world its way. So it's this sort of soft language, but actually very forceful action.
Yeah.
We're going to incentivize and train and persuade. The inference being, if you don't respond to our incentives and training and persuasion, then there'll be fucking consequences. But they're just using this more slippery language. So that was thing number one. And then Nick, who is one of the two people that writes for telecoms.com apart from me, Nick and Mary, were a couple, used to run Total Telecom. I always found that funny. I don't think they ever listened to this, but I took my hat off to them that they basically, they like got married while they were working together.
Yeah.
So that's asking a lot of your relationship,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, here they are, as far as I know, happy as anything. So some people can pull it off. Anyway, he wrote, what did he write? Where's it gone? Oh, I've lost it. His headline was US and EU to form special tech trade club that China isn't allowed into. And it basically looks like a follow-on from this. So they've established this thing. What do they call it? It's called the US-EU Trade and Technology Council.
Right.
And again, it's just a formalised, it's a way of creating a bloc, a NATO-like thing.
Yeah.
But specifically around technology and very pointedly that China's not invited to.
Yeah.
So we've spoken lots of times about balkanisation. This seems to be the West is making a really strong gesture towards increased balkanisation is what I take from it. Do you agree?
Yeah, although I kind of am broadly supportive in a way.
Right.
Because I think, I mean, you know, I'm dubious about some of these supranational institutions in a way. Like you, I perhaps less so than you, but, you know, we talk about the EU quite a bit, don't we? And you're not a big fan. But
not
at the same time, I think to stand up to China in any way, shape or form, we need, you know, the UK itself, post-EU, outside the EU, needs strong partners, really, because because I don't think you could do that alone. You know, you're talking about a country that as big as an economic superpower with 1.4 billion people.
So I want to be devil's advocate and say, do we need to stand up to China? If so, why?
Because they're a totalitarian state.
Normally that just means that they're bastards to their own population.
Mm.
Is the concern that this totalitarianism has turned outwards?
Well, I think that's already happened, hasn't it? You can see that in the last year.
Yeah. I don't largely disagree with you. I'm just sort of challenging you.
I think it's always been turned outwards anyway. I think it's almost naive to say it hasn't turned outwards. I think they've been more militarily aggressive in the last year than they usually are. And Hong Kong and India.
Yeah.
But I think this whole, I mean, you mentioned it yourself, this whole going up and buying up farmland in Africa and, you know, bribing
ports
African heads of state and taking control of things. I think, you know, if we want to be really sort of sceptical about Huawei, yeah, no clear links between have ever been established between Huawei and the Chinese state. It's a privately owned company. It's owned by the employees. I take all that on board, all the messages they say. But at the end of the day, it's a Chinese company. You know, the Chinese seem to get remarkably upset, their ambassadors, whenever you do something against Huawei, don't they?
They do. Oh,
they get remarkably wound up about it. which is almost in a way a reason to be suspicious, I think, and cautious about it. You know, there's no doubt that China's government has been angered by this whole campaign, because they wouldn't be writing up stories in nationalist newspapers about the consequences for Ericsson, then, would they?
I agree with all of that. I think in
the world, you know, the world today is very different from the world 50 years ago, where technology, unfortunately, one of the nasty things about it is it reduces us all to living in a kind of, you know, a village in a way, a global village to some extent, because you can't, because it goes across borders and barriers. Yeah. You know, the internet's one thing, and I think, you know, we've got to think about it, and I think you need allies, strong democratic allies to do that, and therefore I'm quite supportive of this in a way.
Fair enough. So I've got one last thing. I largely agree with you. I'm going to quickly finish off because we're out of time. The sort of threatened rant about the coronavirus thing. The thing that's got my interest recently has been the growing evidence that the coronavirus probably was manipulated in a lab in Wuhan. Yeah. There's a hilarious John Stewart thing. I don't know if you've seen that. John Stewart went on the Colbert Show and just went, you know, oh, I wonder where it came from. Maybe it came from that coronavirus lab in Wuhan, that thing that just cropped up in Wuhan. Anyway, you'd have to see it, but I recommend looking it up on YouTube.
I mean, looking back on it now is almost ridiculous that we thought it didn't come from that, I think.
Well, do you know what? I discounted it because it seemed so obvious. But anyway, my point is, it's too obvious.
Yeah.
It just seemed too obvious.
Yeah. But whose story was it that it was zoonotic in the first place? It was the Chinese's version of events that it was zoonotic.
Yeah, and I went with it. And my reasoning was very flawed. I just thought, I know there's a coronavirus lab next to Wuhan. It's just too easy. Anyway, but that's in Wuhan, I think. Yes, well, there we are.
Yeah.
And that's what John Stewart was doing, this comedic thing about. But it was also on the button. But, you know, you're just seeing all these things. You're seeing actual biochemical evidence that it may be true. And I don't think the Chinese did it deliberately. People are saying that if they were going to do it deliberately, surely they would have had it kick off not in their own fucking country.
Yeah, I don't think it was deliberate.
But what we still don't know, I think right now the prevailing feeling is that it was manipulated.
They found like three people who worked at that lab in November had COVID symptoms and they had to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
That's a weird coincidence.
And, you know, and one of the reasons it's been suppressed, as I suspect it has for so long, is there was American money in that lab. So it's not as simple as just pinning the blame on the Chinese. But I think they suppressed it. You know, they're obviously not a very transparent country. And I think the long and short of it, what makes me feel less charitable towards China, and I really try and not be xenophobic, I really try and not go that any company that's Chinese must therefore be corrupted by China in the way that the Americans always allege. But I just think of the pain and misery and suffering and economic damage this thing's caused.
Yeah.
And it's probably come from there, and they probably could have done a lot more to prevent it happening.
Yeah.
And it does make you feel less charitable towards them. And I know it's got nothing to do with telecoms.
Well, I've never felt charitable towards the Chinese government anyway, so so it doesn't really change my feelings about the Chinese government. Chinese people themselves, great. They're like the Brits. Some of them are nice, some of them are nasty, but I've never felt very charitable about the Chinese government.
In the last sort of month or so, just the malevolence of the regime has sort of gone up a notch in my view. We're out of time on that down note. Just confirmed that none of us are ever going to China. Thank you for listening. Probably not in China. You probably can't get this there. But if you are, thanks for listening there as well. You're very brave. And make sure you join us for the next one.